The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
13 minutes after 7, 770-5633. Happy to have you join in. What is a pebble in your shoe for this morning? This morning. Are you in favor of President Trump tariffing the trading partners of Canada and Mexico? I have some mixed emotions about this because it's my opinion that Trump has already inherited a recession from the Biden administration, a recession or a growing recession, which was already kind of obvious when you look back at what was going on. But the system was trying to paper this over. I'm not sure that it will have the proper response or the expected response right now. It might be more pain without necessarily gain. I mean, tariffing lumber is not going to get American mills rebuilt and open this year. Could be a longer-term deal. I don't know. It's a lot of capital. Takes years to do things like this, permitting process and more. But we could talk about it because it would seem to me that the now, I'm just talking about the way I would look at you know, tariff on lumber or whatever it is. It is going to make it more expensive, which would tend to be an inflationary influence and also would hurt business too. But I'm sure he's going to talk about it and give us the rationale. I'm not a tariff man. I'm not, generally speaking, a tariff man. I'm okay with tariff man if in essence all we're doing is responding to someone tariffing us. I don't know if making some of these I don't know if making lumber more expensive down at Home Depot and Lowe's is necessarily going to help make America great again. If you think I'm wrong, that's fine. I'd love to get your take, or if you have a more nuanced take on it. But we can certainly discuss this. I want to also thank you when you write me the email bill@billmeyershow.com. I read them all. I don't always get a chance to answer, but I try to share as many of them as I can. And Dave wrote me the other day from Eagle Point. And he says, Bill, I just wanted to drop you a note, tell you how much I appreciate your good advertisers. Nate from Tech Nomad just replaced my computer hard drive, did a really good job. And in the recent past, I've had great results from Skypark, both from Steve and Lynn, Quality Tree, Patriot Electric. I've been to Freddy's Diner several times, and he enjoys the show. I really appreciate you letting me know about that. And nothing happens here in Southern Oregon, including in my industry, until something gets sold. And, you know, when you have the people like Skypark and the Jay Austin types and other people that advertise with my show, they're keeping talk radio going. And they're really just, you're my customer, they're my customer, and together we all, we get together. I get to buy overpriced kibble for my my two cats. Oh, by the way, update on the fat cat. Remember I was telling you about yesterday, Charlie? Charlie is only, let's see, his birthday was April 29th, and so he's, gosh, not even quite a year old, about 10 months old. So he's about physically full grown, and we're thinking, boy, he has a tiny head. He has a tiny head because he's been porking away on the food too much, and the rest of his body has gotten big. And so we started, I've been taking your advice. People have been saying, well, why don't you feed them both this morning? Feed them. Feed both, and that's Matt the skinny cat, the skinny Maine Coon. He's the old guy. He's 15 years old. And then there's Charlie, not even 1 year old. But Charlie's kind of, you know, waddling over there a little bit. And so when Matt is done, when they're both done with their first go around at the food this morning, and I was doing this at 4:30 today, take away the bowl. And I did. Matt was perfectly fine. Went into the living room, curled up, going to sleep, something like that. And Charlie's looking at me like, you took away the bowl. This is my raison d'etre, my reason to exist. What am I going to do? I'll tell you how this is going. I think even just the last couple of days of us trying to reduce the amount of food going into the bowl, I've noticed a little bit of pudge coming off of him. And maybe we'll start doing a little bit of, his kitty version of intermittent fasting. So we'll see. But yeah, when you have one skinny cat and one fat cat, I know my sister-in-law out in the Applegates the same way. One skinny cat and one just fat tubalard. You know, and how do you feed them both? and make so everybody gets what they need instead of always what they want. Charlie is very full, food forward, I must say. I've never had a cat that is food forward as him. Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. We go to the phones. Hi, good morning. Who is this and welcome? What's your name?
Welcome to you, too. It's Deplorable Patrick calling from the Bill Meyer Show Callers Hall of Fame.
That's right. You are the original member. You are the original gangster, Patrick. Original gangster.
That's right. And so, first of all, Charlie is a liberal, Bill.
Well, I hope I don't want to ascribe politics to him, but did I ever tell you what happened when we first brought him home from the shelter?
You better go through it again.
Okay. All right. You'll love the story. When we first brought Charlie home, he was in the humane shelter, you know, down on Table Rock in Medford. And he was one of those guys. It was a chaotic environment, whatever it was. We brought him home and had his he had some diseases that needed to be treated and all this other stuff. So I don't think it was a great early kitten time for him before he made it into the shelter for whatever reason. And so we brought him home and gave him food. And it was like he had entered kitty heaven. And I have a feeling that he was actually very, very hungry at an early age, maybe the runt, I don't know what. But he was sitting there doing biscuits, you know, doing the little kneading thing and purring as loud as you can with eating food. And he did that for about the first month. So something, it was almost like he was saying, this is all mine. This is all mine. And I don't have to share it with anybody. You're not going to stop me. I think that's what it had to do, what it had to do with it. I don't know if it was something that he was sort of programmed with or if he's just, programmed to be a little fat tub. But his brother doesn't look all that different from him over at Franklin's house, by the way.
You're a man of many talents. Now we see that you have the ability to read a cat's mind.
Well, you have to, because you can't make a cat do anything that a cat doesn't want to do. Having a cat is kind of a negotiating, you know, you have to negotiate the job, kind of, I think. All right?
Well, I tell you, the reason it got me calling is I reached into this big hat. It has all these scraps of paper in it to pull out a subject to talk about, because there's like 40 bazillion subjects in there. But having a, and I should call Kevin Starrett, but I'm calling you instead. I've got this question here in liberal heaven. I've got two sisters down in Florida. Now, if I go down there and visit with them, and I decide to buy a handgun while I'm down there, probably take, 5 minutes. Do I have to stay down there? I could never come back.
I don't know if it is. I don't think it would be legal for you to purchase a handgun there without it being shipped back to Oregon to an FFL dealer in our state, to a firearms dealer in our state. I think that's the legal way you would have to do it. I don't believe that even in Florida it's legal to buy as an out-of-state resident there.
Well, I was just curious, and you probably had the best answer. But
I'm not a perfect studier of firearm law. I know that you can purchase firearms, you know, from dealers out of state. You do this, but it always ends up being sent to your FFL here in Oregon, where the background check is then conducted, that kind of thing. The resident of your state, you know, the laws of your state. Okay?
So, that sounds pretty good. I'm just wondering about, I should have written my thoughts down, but I appreciate that. And I don't know where we're going with all this, because you can't just have your property in your car and drive. You can't, here in the land of the free.
Yeah, the land of the free, you put that in parentheses, right? Scary air quotes, you know, that sort of thing. The land of you are allowed to do whatever the bureaucratic state is permitting you to do at this point in time, but that doesn't fit on the pocket constitution quite as easily. All right.
I remember one more thing, if I can. If we can get 762 repealed, could we also get Jeff Golden repealed?
Taller lift, but the people down in the South County apparently love that guy. They love that son of a gun. They just do. You know why? Because we don't. They love him because we don't. We don't like his politics. And I think it's the equivalent of, Jeff is the equivalent of Paul Adams or whoever, Evans, Paul Evans I was talking about, who likes just stamping on Eastern Oregon County's faces. Okay? Thanks, DP. Good to hear from you, 770-5633. Let me go to line two. Hi, good morning. It's Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. And who might you be?
Bill, this is Bob Hayworth.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Well, I'm doing fine, but I wanted to tell you about a pebble that I got out of my shoe.
Oh, really? What was that?
Well, you have a sponsor on your show that had a commercial that said, "We bring precise and efficiency right to your doorstep."
Mm-hmm.
And I had a pretty good education here in Medford School District back in the 60s, and my English teacher, Mrs. Littman, educated me about adjectives and nouns.
Okay.
And that sentence didn't make sense to me. So I wrote an email to the company and asked if they were aware of their grammatical error.
Uh-huh.
And wouldn't you know, they changed the commercial.
Oh, was that...
We bring precision and efficiency right to your doorstep.
Precision and efficiency. So they changed it. So you had an effect on an advertiser.
But I wonder... I don't know anything about recording processes for commercials. I know about music,
mm-hmm.
but in Medford, are voiceover guys have to be actor people?
Do they have to be actor or after, you said?
After members, yeah.
Oh, no. We are not a union shop, and anybody who wants to be a voiceover person, you can do that. We have sponsors come in. I voice many commercials. Other people voice them. There is no union membership required. Nothing yet.
Okay. Well, I hope it didn't cost this company a lot of money to redo their commercial anyway.
I doubt it did. I'm sure it's just one of those things like, hey, we need to fix that. And then we get a note from them. And then the sales guy says, hey, Bill, can you revoice this or whatever it is? And then it gets done and life's good. Okay?
Well, life is good.
All right.
I thank them for doing it.
All right. Thank you very much. Small favors there. This is the Bill Meyer Show on KMED, 99.3 KBXG. Price of gold, I know that it was kind of on a little bit of a pullback. Let me see if I can get this. But, I mean, I'm still bullish long-term here on gold. Let's see, what is it? I always go to Burt's Gold page on Lou Rockwell. Always has the latest one. Burt was a great guy. Always enjoyed. Oh, we actually saw about a $50 pop-up in gold overnight. Oh, you know what's going on here. Yeah, they're looking at instability, probably in trade. Could be about the tariffs coming in, looking at this as recessionary and inflationary, maybe more inflationary at the moment. Anyway, that's the way markets work. And if you're looking to buy and or sell, though, deal with the recognized experts. They'll treat you fairly. One of my longest sponsors, great people supporting talk radio and supporting your ability to get your news and entertainment and get your voice on the air here, too. That's Jay Austin and Company, gold and silver buyers in Ashland, 1632 Ashland Street and 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. By the way, they're buying lots of scrap gold and silver right now, especially with these elevated values. About $2,900 an ounce on the gold and about 31.5 on the silver. Silver's not hit its all-time high. Got about another $10 to go with that. Maybe more room to run for a bull market in silver. I don't know. But either way, when you're wanting to either get this wealth protection or liquidate at a great value for to you right now, talk to Jay Austin. 6th and G in Grants Pass and 1632 Ashland Street. Call 482-3715. JayAustinBrokers.com. FortuneReserve.com. Good people.
Wipe out hunger is over. Thank you to everyone who participated in our Wipe Out Hunger campaign at Kelly's Automotive Service. We're so grateful for your generosity, and we hope that you're seeing better with your new wiper blades. But now we want to wipe out the rodents that are living underneath the hood of your car, causing wiring issues and other expensive repairs. Call us or go online at kellysautomotive.com and make an appointment for installation of our ultrasonic rodent repeller for just $197. Kelly's Automotive Service will restore your vehicle, but take care of you.
I had the worst. worst dream last night. You were in a car crash and the kids and I were on our own. We had to move out of the house because I couldn't afford it anymore.
That's awful, hon.
My brother was saying he got life insurance from Ethos. With Ethos, it only took 10 minutes and he got $2 million in coverage for around $2 a day. It's all online. No medical exam. He just answered a few health questions right from his house.
Ethos, here we come.
Visit GetEthos.com. That's GetEthos.com.
Sample rate is a 10-year term life policy for 35-year-old healthy, non-smoking male. Billed monthly.
News Talk 106.3 KMET. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Scott writes me this morning. I'll give him an email of the day. Bill, tariffs on Canadian lumber will bring back the lumber industry to the United States and to Oregon. Short-term pain for long-term gain for Oregon. I hope you're right about that. My only question about this, Scott, is that even if the value of the timber did go up, that doesn't fix the political risk that the system in Oregon, including the senators, don't want it. They don't want this. So what will the tariffs actually accomplish? I'm just bringing up the opposing force. You know, we have we're going to make Canadian lumber more expensive so that it makes more sense to then to cut ours. And I think, you know, in a free state, that would make sense. Does that actually change in Oregon? I think that's a reasonable question to ask, Scott. But I appreciate you. I know that's what President Trump is trying to do with this, and I would like to see that. I just don't see the mechanism of that right now. The billions of dollars of capital that would need to be put into this to make that all happen. But you could be right. You could be right. Emails of the day, by the way, are sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. By the way, if you don't have medical or dental insurance, they have a dental plan there, which works a lot like insurance, more affordable, better benefits, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. Another email of the day, Mike writes me here, Mike Lindgren. Bill, I was at that meeting about the fire map at Medford Library. It was very orderly, one person at a time. And they had to yell because of the size of the room. I think Jeff Golden was intimidated by the size of the crowd and, you know, opposed to something that he sponsored. No one there was disorderly or talking over him or anyone asking questions. You keep repeating Jeff's perspective of what happened at that meeting. The people in that room were rural landowners, not rioters, respectful of each other and orderly. Mike, I appreciate your perspective, but I had many people wrote me who are friends of mine who looked at it a little bit closer to where Jeff Golden was talking about. It wasn't about rioting, but it was a lot of the shout-down from their point of view, and they were opponents of Senator Golden. So I think maybe we'll split the difference between what Jeff Golden is saying and what you're thinking. But it was a little more sporty than we thought, okay? Just doing that. 770-5633.
This is an emergency alert from Jackson County Emergency Management.
Imagine if instead of this ad, you were receiving an evacuation notice. Would you be prepared at that very moment? Jackson Alerts is Jackson County's new notification system.
I'm Jackson County Sheriff Nate Sickler. Emergencies can strike anytime and seconds count. Are you prepared? Make sure you're signed up for Jackson Alerts and know your zone.
Jackson County. Sign up at JacksonAlerts.org. That's JacksonAlerts.org.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your work truck and van headquarters, proudly offering Adrian Steel interior shelving packages, partitions, and the best ladder racks in the business. Integrate a bed slide or decked drawer system to boost your efficiency. Also featuring the largest selection of commercial fiberglass and metal truck canopies from leading manufacturers such as ARE, SmartCap, Century, and more. Come see Oregon Truck and Auto Authority today and take your efficiency to the next level.
732 News is next. Jeff and Selma is here, though. Jeff, you were kind of agreeing with Bob Hayworth about changing precision or whatever it is, or changing the ad. You were laughing about that, huh?
Yeah, I used to hear that commercial all the time and just drive me crazy. Precise and efficiency. No, it's supposed to be precision. Then I heard it yesterday that they had changed it. Maybe I started laughing out loud. But I used to, my first gig in radio, the salesman would write the copy. And the guy who did Fawcett's IGA was just terrible. And I would change the copy and do the spot. And then after about three times of doing that, I get called in the office because I hurt the salesman's feelings.
Oh, okay. I've always wanted to do an advertising agency and call it Storewide Productions. Because, you know, all the trite phrases that we would use in advertising, you know, wall-to-wall store-wide savings, and what's the other one? You'll be glad you did. You'll be glad you did.
Yeah, well, all the other cliches that we can come up with, but it's promotion, Bill. You know that.
I understand it. No such thing as bad promotion. Thanks, Jeff. Let me go to the next line here. Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Hi, who's this? Good morning. Hello?
Hi. Am I on the line? I didn't hear the static.
You are on. And
thank you.
And you don't have to give me any static. There we go. Go ahead.
My name's Lori, and I wanted to comment. I also was at the library at that town hall with Jeff Golden.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very strongly that people did not yell at that meeting. When I went started going into the room before the meeting started, Jeff was standing out in the hallway talking with somebody from the library. And I heard him say as I walked past, he hasn't had any threats yet, but he anticipated that there may be. And that bothered me because we were there peacefully. We weren't there to cause trouble. He was nervous before the meeting started, and he anticipated that people were going to be unruly.
I wanted to let you know that he called me after the meeting really shaken. And I don't think he was kidding around.
He was upset before it even started.
Oh, he was.
And it really didn't get started until 45 minutes late because they moved us, had to move us to a different room. But his very first comment when somebody, the first person that spoke, his comment was, I can't remember the word he used, but I chimed in and said that that person wasn't, disrespectful. He said that he accused that person of being disrespectful, and that person was not disrespectful in any means.
But most likely disagreeing with his policy, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And a lot of us were. And there was a couple of people that voices were elevated. But remember, there was like 150 people in that room. And I attend a lot of meetings in that room, and people have to be loud to be heard. Anyway, I just want to say I absolutely agree with your previous caller saying that the audience was not out of line,
okay. And
we did not yell. But emotions are high over this issue.
Yeah, well, I've heard it from both sides. I really have, and from people who are not supporters of Jeff Golden, they thought it was getting a little sporty at point. I don't want to legislate the past of that meeting, but thank you for your opinion that it wasn't maybe as bad as some had portrayed it. Okay?
Thank you for your time.
All right. And thank you for listening. 7:36.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency is closing more than 100 IRS field offices, including two in Oregon. Doge says closing offices in Bend and Salem will save the federal government around $450,000 a year in lease payments. Oregon Senator Ron Wyden issued a statement saying the consequences for families in Oregon and across the country are real and dire. Telecommunications topped the list of consumer complaints last year to the Oregon Attorney General's office. Imposter scams were second, followed by auto sales and auto repair. The Attorney General's consumer hotline received over 22,000 calls and 9,200 written complaints. A former Oregon Youth Authority counselor was sentenced Monday to 5 years in prison for having sex with a young adult in her care. Emily Etchenkamp was responsible for the victim's substance abuse and mental health treatment. She met the victim in places she knew were not monitored. Bill London, KMED.
The song Our House by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young only reached number 30 on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1970, but it stands the test of time. If you have a very, very, very fine house, Millett Construction wants to help you keep it that way. So if the vase that you bought today looks a bit tilted on the table, it might be a sloping floor due to a shifting foundation. Call Millett Construction for an inspection and estimate to permanently correct the issue so your house stands the test of time, too. MilletteConstruction.com.
It's true. Even the rogue gardener faces challenges.
What's a good thing? What isn't a good thing? It can be hard to distinguish. My frustration this year in my gardening was with the birds. That's why I'm talking about birds. All the stuff that they did starting with the first crop of peas. And I mean, it has just been constant. And yet they did some good things.
Talk about it with Rogue Gardener. Saturdays 10 to noon, Sunday morning encore at 9 on KMED, sponsored by Grange Co-op.
Hi, I'm Randy with Diner 62, and I'm on KMED.
One of my favorite Brit shows of all time, Randy Lewis. Randy Lewis had a bunch of old dogs up there on stage with him a number of years ago before he passed away. And I swear that if Ramsey Lewis hadn't been getting paid, he would have still been on that stage. They were just having the time of their life. One of my favorite Brit shows ever. 7:38, former state senator, Herman Bertschinger. Senator, welcome back to the show. Always good having you on. Welcome, sir.
Well, good morning. Yeah, I'm just sitting here, you know, looking at some social media stuff, Bill, and I usually don't get too, you know, too involved with that. I kind of watch, but I'll tell you, there's so many posts, you know, I stand with Ukraine, and I just seen a crazy one that has Trump and Putin laying in a coffin and Zelensky taking a selfie with them, you know, and so I've been responding this morning. You know what I've been saying?
What you been saying?
I've been saying, are you ready to send your kids and grandkids over there?
And the answer is always no.
And it blows my mind, you know, as a person that has read a lot about wars. It's always great as long as we're not sending any of my kids.
I can't help but notice that the Democrats, some of the Republicans that are just, you know, lickspittles on the Ukraine issue, they seem to be really, it's kind of an old saying at this point, but wanting to fight for the last Ukrainian. I swear that's what's going on, what they're still trying to press forward here. Am I wrong on that?
Well, and if you really, you know, take a good look at history and wars and everything, most wars are started over border disputes.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is most wars are won by one person outlasting the other through attrition. And that's what is exactly happening in Ukraine. We've got to figure out a different way to reconcile our differences in war, because you got almost 1 million people dead.
I was watching videos in which they're grabbing people off the street.
Yes. Yeah, they're wiping out a whole generation of Ukrainians.
Yeah.
And you know, and these people I've seen, I won't name the individuals, says, we got to fight to the end because Putin's a bully. Well, Putin may be a bully, and I certainly don't like his policies.
No.
Or most of the policies that have come out of the Soviet Union. But at the end of the day, there's this little thing called reality.
And the reality is that, no, we're not going to have Ukraine as a part of NATO. And no, we're not going to have that tripwire over time. Because...
No.
Putin's not going to tolerate it. Putin made it clear he was never going to tolerate it. He was very clear with this right from the beginning. Now, we can have all sorts of arguments about the Crimea, and we could also have the arguments about about the evidence that the United States more or less fomented a color revolution there, you know, really, and installed our own guy a number of years ago. We've had a lot of sticky fingers in there for a while, and we're going to have to extract ourselves in some form. And I guess if Europe wants to get involved and wants to send their sons and daughters there, I guess that's their business, but I don't think that's really what they mean about getting involved. What do you say?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And you know, if you study MacArthur's last speech to Congress when he retired after 57 years, he realized, because of the atomic age, his words, and I don't know if I'm going to get the exact quote, but it's going to be pretty close, is that we have got to figure out another way to reconcile our differences other than war, because Armageddon is knocking at our door. And, you know, things have changed now. The nuclear age has changed things. And, you know, these people that promote war, I just simply don't understand. And they obviously don't understand.
Well, It appears that the battlefield when it comes to war has shifted to the economic front, so to speak. And we're looking at this going on right now. The markets ended up having a Trump relief rally after he got elected. And now there appears to be kind of a Trump sell-off. And this is most likely temporary. You know, when it happens, the emotions get high and then the traders start going nuts. But tariff wars, as a principle, I don't know how effective it's going to be in this particular case. I know like Scott from Jacksonville writing me and saying, you know, tariff on Canadian lumber, that will help restore the United States or Oregon's timber industry. And I don't see the political support for that because of our environmental policy and public land policy. Am I wrong about that to notice that? Or is there a chance this could be changed? What do you think about that here?
Well, with the current infrastructure, what's left, the only thing that's going to happen is it's going to make the timber more expensive in the United States. That's what is going to happen. So because there's going to be, so it's always, you know, the timber industry, if I've always said, is the simplest form of supply and demand. Mm-hmm. It's always been like that. And so now you're going to limit the import of Canadian timber. Mm-hmm. So you still have the same demand, but a lesser supply. So what happens?
Price goes up.
Price goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then as the price goes up, now all of a sudden the Canadians say, well, you know what? No problem. We can afford to pay the 25% because the price is up.
Would that actually create more timber mills in the state of Oregon? Would that tariff be kind of a goose in your opinion? I mean, you've lived here during the timber time. I mean, you've been here a long time, Herman. All right.
Yeah. Oh, well, that was my bread and butter for 35 years.
I mean, I didn't come to Southern Oregon until 1991. All right. So I came in there after the Spotted Owl was destroying everything. And the general consensus seems to be, at least in Oregon, that trees are not to be harvested. Trees are not a benefit. Trees are a burden that have to be paid for, and you have to pay to burn them at taxpayer expense with the collaboratives. You know, it seems to be the, you know, we're putting native fire back on the lands. You know, this kind of nonsense, in my opinion.
Well, to spool up the timber production for lumber and plywood and stuff like that, you know, first, the remaining mills, how much are they going to want to put in infrastructure to up productivity?
There would have to be a long-term
right.
plan that would make
yep.
it clear that policy has changed before anyone's going to commit billions of dollars of capital to do this. That's how I'm looking at it, though, but
You're exactly right.
I'm not an economist. I'm going to shrug my head. I'm going to shrug my shoulders. You know how like the Italians always do in the mob movies?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not an economist. What do I know? I'm going to shrug, right?
You know? Yeah.
But I just know that no one's going to be committing billions of dollars to building timber mills in Oregon and harvesting facilities and doing this unless they see a long-term benefit and no political risk. And political risk, as long as it's the West Coast, it's still there because all it takes is, you know, Wyden and Merkley, they shut that down, and the state of Oregon is probably not that friendly to it. Am I wrong?
No, you're right, but it's a lot longer, bigger conversation. You have to remember, when we became the timber giant, that was because of World War I and World War II.
And the big build-out of American infrastructure. We were also rebuilding the rest of the news.
That was the Marshall Plan, and we...
Yeah, we were rebuilding the rest of the world at that time, too, right?
And that's because we had the infrastructure. That has changed now. Every continent can produce fiber products and has the infrastructure. Okay, back in those days, you didn't have... You know, South America or Australia or even Eurasia producing because they didn't have the infrastructure to move the timber. But now that has all changed. There's fiber being produced all across this planet. So our competition in that market is a greater than it was, say, 50 years ago.
So we have to be careful then when we look back wistfully at what we once had. And just saying all we have to do is just put a tariff on and we're going to get that back. There's more moving parts to this.
We've got to be able to sell it to somebody
yeah.
and make a profit. So there's a few moving pieces there that people kind of seem to ignore.
All right. And for all we know, and you've talked to me about this before, tariff wars, which I guess we're now entering now, they do have a way of working themselves out. Deal cutting, right? It's just the way it works.
Yeah, it is. And tariff wars, they always work their way out. They are. They're wars. They're tariff wars.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's just how it works. I'm not too worried about it. But, you know, the bigger picture, what's going on, and we've been talking now. I've been thinking, Bill, do you
really hey, I'll tell you what. I know where you want to take this. We talked about this a little earlier. We got a couple of calls. I think people want to ask you a question about this first, okay? Then we'll move on to the second topic about the ice cream, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, everybody wants free ice cream still. Let me go to line two. Hi, line two. You're on there with Herman. Who's this?
Hi, this is Damien. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Damien. Do you want to talk about this subject or something else?
Well, no. I'm all with the last caller on tariff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's before the Tax Act of 1913, our federal government made their only money, their only source of income was tariffs.
Absolutely. We were totally that way. We were a much smaller government, too, though, to be fair.
Well, exactly. And that's its own subject. But in the 50s and 60s here in Southern Oregon, between Ashland and Glendale, Oregon, there were 57 lumber mills.
That's right.
57?
Yes.
Wow. How many do we have left at this point?
The only lumber mill I know of now is up in Glendale.
Glendale.
Superior.
Yeah.
And as a truck driver, I used to haul 2x4s out of Boise Cascade here in Medford and into California. And we were bringing sugar pine logs from private sales in California back up here. And you think, and I'm sorry, I'm just reading my notes. Eagle Mill Road in Ashland,
yeah,
was a logging town. And that's how Ashland is. And now Ashland is 14 miles of something else.
Yeah, but that's kind of to my point there. And I'm not being defeatist about this. All I'm saying is that, you know, if you were going to find a place to put $1 billion of investment into a state, or $2 billion, would you put it into timber at this point, knowing the political risk here, Damien?
Well, and that's my point too. Is even though the tariffs will try to bring business back, the regulations that are there are not conducive to new business.
All right. I appreciate your opinion on that one. Guess kind of seeing the things our way a little bit here. And like I said, you know, and maybe it will. Maybe it will generate more business. But, you know, there has to be safety. There has to be a lack of political risk for this to happen. Hi, you're on with Bill and Herman. Who's this? Good morning.
Hey, well, Sam in here, Bill.
Hey, Steve. You're with Herman. What do you have to say to him?
Well, I used to run sawmills, so I know what it takes to make one function. And I've got a couple calls in to some of the manufacturing companies who make that equipment. It's not only sawmills. It's some steel manufacturers. It's foundries. There's a lot of cast iron products that go into sawmills and sprockets and gearboxes and you know, the wheels on the band mills, that the, you know, like a 7 or 6 foot band mill, the wheels on the bandsaw are that big. They're 6 or 7 feet and they're cast iron. So there's a lot of issues it's going to take to get that industry back up again. Like I said, I've got some calls in just to get some ballpark ideas.
I would love to hear from that when you do that, Steve. I appreciate the call.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
I really would. I would love to hear about this because I guess our bottom line is that we hope that it could bring some of it back there. It's just another high lift, though, Herman. That's our bottom line here. The bottom line, there's just too much risk in going into that right now and too much competition.
That's correct. No, that's absolutely correct. So, you know, at the end of the day, you have to be able to do the investment, produce the product, and make a profit. And if you don't do that, you won't succeed.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a different business model than post-World War II, for sure. All right.
That's right.
So I guess we have to look at other things, perhaps, that we can work on to spur Oregon economic development, assuming that the state legislature actually wants Oregon to be productive. All right. So a little bit of a snarky comment, I know. But let us move on to a real threat, I think. At least I'm thinking this could be a real threat to the Trump agenda right now, and something we got to be on the lookout for. And I'm starting to even, and I'll bet you, given the fact that Cliff Benz is your friend, right? I know you talk with Cliff all the time, don't you?
Yeah. Well, he was my deputy leader when I was the Republican leader, so we go back a ways.
I know him not as well as you do. Like I said, you've been working with him for just ages, okay? I'm starting to hear complaints coming from people who we consider the rock-ribbed conservatives, the independent rural folks, and all that sort of stuff. And I'm concerned that the Trump agenda gets shot down from by rural supporters, that they need their self-licking ice cream cone continuing to be funded. Is that a fair is that a fair thing to say at this point? I hate to put it that way.
You're spot on, and you know, you and I have been talking about this for 6 years now. How many times we talk about the national debt, and now we're getting down to okay. We all recognize we got this. We got to do stuff about it. But now it's, well, as long as it's not my program that we shut down, you know. So I think it's going to be tumultuous, and it's just how it's going to be. But to continue to go on this trajectory is will destroy the country. And I'll give you a great example.
Please.
Germany. So why did Germany, after World War I, go in such a deep depression and high inflation and just the worst times in its whole history? The reason why was the Versailles Treaty, which put a huge debt on Germany to repay back all the other countries for the war. So it was debt that brought Germany down after the war. It was debt. And that's what will eventually happen in the United States if you don't start slowing this growth down.
Which is why the Trump administration rightly sees the national debt and others there looking at it the same way as an existential threat. So you look at the tariffs, and you're looking at tariffs, and you're thinking like, okay, you can get some income from that. You can get some income from this. He does appear to be looking to want to get, you know, more income into the coffers without necessarily taxing people. Would that be a fair assessment?
You can't keep borrowing a couple $1 trillion a year to keep the U.S. going. It's just any economist. I always remember economists, you know, saying that there's a tipping point. Alan Greenspan used to warn there's a tipping point. And, you know, when the interest on a national debt is $1 trillion, if we had that $1 trillion, that could go to about $3,000 for every person in the United States towards their health care. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is crazy numbers. But the average voter out there just doesn't understand these numbers. 37, those two words, 37, doesn't sound like much. Oh, well, it's under 40, it's under 100. That can't be too bad. So, you know, I was just reading a book and looking at a quote from Winston Churchill. He always says, democracy is great until you have a five-minute conversation with an average voter. So what he was trying to say is people just don't understand, and they don't understand this burden of debt and how it can eventually destroy the country. There's no question.
And we as Americans, I think, have a normalcy bias. We have a normalcy bias, I think, in which we're the big dog. We have the world reserve currency. Nothing can really challenge that stuff. And we can continue to do that and be the indispensable nation. But the debt overhang has destroyed every nation that ends up having that kind of percentage of GDP, debt to GDP ratio. It always ends up destroying the nation unless something is done really seriously to rein this in.
Every single time. There's no exception.
Yeah, there's not even for the United States of America.
No.
And you know, probably one of the biggest challenges that we're going to face here is, and by the way, I'm someone who is going to be dependent on Social Security. So I got a dog in this fight, Herman. I really do.
Oh, yeah.
Because even President Trump has talked about hands off the entitlements of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. I get that. Now, I know that politically there's no way that you can sit there and cut it or rein it in. Not right now. I get this. But ultimately, they're going to have to. They're not going to have any choice but to do it because we're having fewer and fewer workers supporting a lot of people sitting in the back part of the wagon. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. The system, they made some real errors when they created that system.
Indeed, they did.
Same thing with PERS, PERS in Oregon.
Yeah.
That's another one, you know. They made some very big errors. And then they try to hang their hat on, well, hey, things are going to inflate over time, and so we'll take these inflated dollars and pay off the old dollars.
But what they really do is just, roll it over. They keep rolling it over. They never do really pay it down.
Yeah, they never pay it down with the new dollars. They just keep rolling it over and making it worse. And we're to that point.
And I admire the Trump administration for at least finally trying to go about this and to do it. And I hope I'm wrong about this one, but I'm already seeing, when it comes to farm subsidies and crop subsidies, and I'm not just picking on farmers. I'm just talking about a few headlines that I would end up seeing that he's going to be getting just as much attack, I think, maybe not quite as violent, but I think he's going to be getting it from his right flank, too. And I'm a little concerned about that.
And agriculture's big. You know, I always make a joke with my relatives back east that are big farmers. I say, you guys spend as much time farming the mailbox as you do farming the field.
Uh-huh.
And they're all crying right now because you got $2.50 corn. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if Brazil and Argentina and South Africa and these other countries, if they're producing corn at $2.50, well, guess what? You're going to have to do it, too. So you better figure out how to do it.
So our real question is, will all sides of the aisle truly be okay with watching the six or the self? Will we be comfortable, I guess, Herman, seeing all of our self-licking ice cream cones, government programs in all sorts of different agencies and levels? Will we be okay with seeing them cut, even if it hurts us some?
That's right. No, that's going to be, and Medicaid is a big one here in Oregon. And
hey, Cliff yesterday was talking about 40%. 40% of the second district can't afford insurance for themselves. So it's getting paid for by FedGov, right?
Well, how that happened, when I went in the Senate, it was 19% of my district, which is, part of Cliff's district. 19% was on Medicaid. Well, the state expanded Medicaid because it's more free ice cream.
Yeah, Oregon Health Plan. Yeah.
And when I left, it was 39%. So Cliff was right. It's 40%. And it's hard to reel those things back,
Once you hand out the self-licking ice cream cone, boy, you could say all the ice cream's melting or missing, but they want their ice cream cone.
Well, and there's other things that happen. So a friend of mine is a physician in Germany, and he's told me multiple times, multiple conversations, that half the people that he sees every day doesn't even need to see him, but they do because they have the card, is what he says. So they got socialized medicine. So it doesn't cost anything to go to the doctor. So it becomes almost a social event, and you just go. You just go, I don't feel good today, and so I'm going to go to the doctor. And so there's these unintended consequences that happens when things come very easy to people. So I tell you, we are in for some tumultuous times, and you are right. And I don't know how much pain Americans are going to put up with. It's going to be interesting to see. But at the end of the day, someplace in the future, it'll all come to a head. So
because it must. The math doesn't lie.
History tells it. It does every single time.
Yeah, and same with Oregon PERS. You know, an unpayable debt, to a certain extent, you know, if a debt becomes unpayable, it won't get paid. And if our national debt is unpayable because it's just too large, it gets paid in a revocation of your currency standard, you know, that sort of thing. And one way or another, your standard of living in your country reduces. That's just the basic economics.
Let me ask you this. If people start, if we have an appetite and we have to increase the national debt a couple trillion every year to keep going, and people that buy those bonds are saying, well, they may not be able to pay the interest, and we can make other investments in other places of the world that gives us a better return on investment. Now we don't have anybody to buy the bonds, and now we can't. Now we cannot borrow the $2 trillion a year. Then what, Bill?
Then you monetize it, and you just you just print it. And then what ended up shoving Germany into the toilet in the 1920s, right?
Oh, and Germany's a great lesson because, you know, they were top of the dog in Europe. I mean, if you ever read an interesting book about Bismarck and what he did in the Federation of the German States, and then all the wars that he created in Europe in the 1800s that they won. So they were like, they were the king. They were the powerhouse. All right. I mean, everybody, oh, God, we don't want Germany to invade us.
Yeah.
Well, look what happened. Look how that all worked out for them. So, it, you know, nothing ever stays the same. It doesn't. It's always going to change. And when you look at personal debt, see, we haven't even touched on personal debt. You would be surprised how many people in this country are borrowing the money to make the payments on money that they've borrowed. How's that going to work out for them?
Long term, it never works. And yet, that's what our federal government's been doing right now for quite some time.
And Trump realizes they have to stop the growth. That's the first thing that has to happen.
You have to stop digging the hole deeper, right?
Right. You're not going to pay it down anytime soon. But what they're trying to do is get to a point where it doesn't grow. That's their number one priority.
Evan, even at the point where it doesn't grow, you know they're going to be screaming. You know it, Herman.
Oh, gosh. Student loans. Just name it. Just name all the difference. It just go down the list.
Just prepare. Just know that it's coming. It's not always here. And it's not just what Doge is doing. It's that whole system right now being reformed.
I think my parting words last time I talked to the congressman was, prepare yourself for a lot of belly aching.
I hope that Cliff has asbestos undershorts, okay? That's all I can say.
And, you know, and then you're looking at Wyden and Merkley, you know, they're taking advantage of this. But if you go to Wyden and Merkley town hall, the question to them is, how do we solve the national debt, Senator Wyden? You've been there for 30 years. You've been the guy that created it because it was pretty much balanced in the Clinton administration. So you're part of the problem, Senator White.
Well, I know what Ron would say, something along the lines of, like Bernie, the wealthy need to pay their fair share. Herman, you need to pay their fair share.
He is the wealthy.
I know. Well, maybe not him. No, he wouldn't need to pay that. But other people need to pay it. They would probably look at you as being wealthy. I don't know. Herman, thanks for the talk as always. We'll catch you around, okay? Always interesting.
Right,
so just prepare for the deluge. And if you think it's loud and cantankerous right now, just wait.